Graphic sensor from the mini satellite that was watching the newly arrived moonlet on the other side of the ring. Wonderly frowned at the display. It didn't look right. She called up the spectrograph's earlier data. The moonlet was definitely icy, but laced with dark, carbonaceous soot. Yet, the real-time spectrogram showed much less carbon. It was practically all ice. Where did the carbon get to? Intrigued, she switched back to the mini-sat's visual display and sank back in her little chair, gasping. The moonlet was in the center of what looked like a maelstrom. A whirlpool of ice flakes was swirling around the moonlet, like a huge family engulfing a newly arrived member. "My God Almighty! They're alive!" Wonderly shouted, leaping out of her chair. "They're alive!"
Gaeta had learned long ago that panic was the worst enemy. Even with his faceplate covered so thickly that he could see nothing outside, he kept calm as he checked the suit's systems. Life support okay. Power okay. Communications in the green. Propulsion ready. No need to push the red button yet. "Try rubbing the ice off your faceplate," came Fritz's voice, also calm, methodical. "Fritz will keep on recommending different fixes until I go down in flames," Gaeta knew. "I've done that," he said, raising his left arm to wipe at the faceplate again. The arm felt stiffer than it had just a few moments earlier. "They just come back again." As he spoke, Gaeta rubbed the pincers of his left arm across the faceplate. They scraped some of the ice off enough so that he could see more particles rushing toward him. Within seconds, the faceplate was covered up again. "No joy," he said. "They just swarm in and cover everything. It's like they're alive. I can see them crawling across my faceplate." "They are alive," Wonderly broke in, her voice shrill with exhilaration. "Get some in the sample box." Gaeta huffed. "Maybe they're going to get me in their sample box." He wondered how much thickness of ice it would take to block his antennas and cut off communications. "I'm getting freeze-wrapped like Christmas turkey, and she's worried about getting samples to study." He checked the temperatures inside the suit. The display was normal, although Gaeta thought it felt chillier than normal. "Just my imagination," he told himself. "Yeah, sure." He called to Fritz. "I think maybe I ought to light off the jets and get out of here." "Not yet," Wonderly pleaded. "Try to collect some samples." Fritz's voice, icy calm, said, "Your suit functions aren't being impaired." "Not yet," Gaeta agreed. "But what chingado good am I sitting out here, blind as a bat and covered with ice?" Wonderly asked, "Can you at least wait until the mini-sat swings over your side of the planet so I can get spectrographic readings on the ice that's covering you?" "How long will that take?" Fritz asked. A pause. Then Wonderly answered, her voice much lower. 11 hours and 27 minutes. "The suit is designed for a 48-hour excursion," said Fritz. "But if the ice covering continues to build up, his communications and propulsion functions might be disabled." Before Wonderly could reply, Gaeta said, "I'm okay for now, Fritz. Let's see what happens." Berkowitz spoke up. "This is terrific stuff, people, but all your suit cameras are covered up. We're getting nothing but audio from you, Manny. If we can get outside video from the mini-sat, we'll be golden." Gaeta nodded inside his helmet, thinking sardonically, "And if I get killed, the ratings will be even better."
Feeling shaky after her near drowning, and even shakier knowing that somehow Kananga's people were tracking her, Holly walked as fast as she could to the end of the tunnel, climbed the metal ladder that led up to the surface, and pushed open a hatch disguised to look like a small boulder. She was at the end cap. She paused for a moment and took a deep breath of air. It seemed fresh and sweet. The entire habitat spread before her eyes, green and wide and open. She pulled herself up from the hatch, swung the plastic boulder shut again, and started across the springy green grass toward the grove of young elms and maples sprouting farther up toward the center line. Somebody was already there, she saw as she approached the woods, lying stretched out on the mossy ground in among the trees. Holly froze, feeling like a deer that spotted a mountain lion. But the man, she thought it looked like a man, seemed to be asleep or unconscious or even dead. He wasn't wearing the black outfit of the security department either, just tan coveralls. Cautiously, Holly approached near enough to make out his face. "It's Raoul," she realized. "What's he doing out here?" A thought stopped her in her tracks. "Is he working for Kananga? Is he part of some search group looking for me?" Then she realized she was standing out in the open, perfectly visible to anyone within a kilometer or more. Raoul wouldn't go over to Kananga, she decided. He's a friend. She went to him, feeling a little safer once she was within the shadow of the trees. Tal Valera stirred as she approached him, blinked, then sat up so abruptly it startled Holly. He blinked again, rubbed his eyes. "Holly, is it you, or am I dreaming?" She smiled warmly. "It's me, Raoul. What are you doing all the way out here?"
"Looking for you," he said, getting to his feet. "Guess I dozed off. Some searcher, huh?" He grinned sheepishly.
"You're just going to get yourself in trouble, Raoul. Kananga's people are following me. I've been trying to stay a jump ahead of them."
Tal Valera took in a deep breath. "I know. I came to help you." Holly thought that if Raoul knew enough about her to wait for her here at the NCAP, Kananga's people must have figured out her habits, too. "We've got to find some place to hide," she said. "Some place where we'll be safe."
"It's too late for that," said a new voice. They turned and saw a tall, lanky young man whose skin was the color of smooth, dark chocolate. In his hand was the small electronic sniffer.
"Colonel Kananga wants to see you, Miss Lane," he said, his voice soft, non-threatening.
"I don't want to see Colonel Kananga," said Holly.
"That's unfortunate.
I'm afraid I must insist that you come with me."
Tal Valera stepped in front of Holly. "Run, Holly," he said. "I'll hold him off while you get away."
The black smiled. Pointing out beyond the trees to a trio of black-clad people approaching them, he said, "There's no need for violence, and there's no place to run to."
Ring creatures. Wonderly could barely contain her excitement. She was bouncing up and down in her little chair as she watched the ring particles swarming over the new moonlet. "It's food for them," she told herself as she switched from visual to infrared and then to the spectrographic display. She wished there had been room in the mini-sat for ultraviolet and gamma-ray sensors. "What we need is an active laser probe," she thought, then immediately countered. "But that might kill the particles." "Particles? No, they're living creatures. Ice creatures, surviving at temperatures of minus 200 Celsius and lower. Extremophiles that thrive in a low-temperature environment." "The mystery of Saturn's rings is solved," she thought. "The rings aren't just passive collections of ice flakes. They're made of active, living creatures. They grab anything that falls into their region and take it apart. Asteroids, little ice chunks, it's all food for them. That's how Saturn can maintain its ring system. It's alive." "Let's see," she thought. "Saturn has 42 moons that we know of. Every so often, an asteroid or an ice chunk from the Kuiper Belt wanders into the ring system, and these creatures chew it up. The rings are constantly losing particles, having them sucked down into Saturn's clouds. But the rings keep renewing themselves by devouring the incoming moonlets that stray into their grip." Suddenly, she looked up from the displays. "Manny! They'll try to chew up Manny's suit! They could kill him!" She yelled into her comlink, "Manny, get out of there now before they chew through your suit!" Fritz's voice replied coldly,
"I don't know if he can hear us. I haven't had any word from him for nearly half an hour. The ice must have built up too thickly over his antennas."
Holly watched the three black-clad figures approaching, climbing the grassy rise toward the copse where she and Tal Valera stood with the Ethiopian tracker. He had his comm unit to his ear, nodding unconsciously as he listened to his orders. At last he said, "Colonel Kananga is on his way."